We've invited one of our favorite regular guests, Bob King, to join us tonight. He's a photographer and a photo editor at the Duluth News Tribune and an amateur astronomer. Bob has written the Astro Bob blog for the Duluth News Tribune since 2008, and he's here to chat with us tonight about the possibility that a meteor strike occurred in our area a few nights ago and was captured in a photo. And we'll talk all things meteor and photography with Mr. Bob King. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Bob.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
The social networks this week up in Grand Marais, a lot of photos are always shared. There's always these beautiful fall color photos. But one of them in particular struck us as very, very intriguing, and it's the possible shot of a meteor strike. Have you seen this photo, Bob?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
And what do you think? How likely is it that we've got ourselves a keeper?
Well, if there's a difference, of course, in the word meteor and strike. Meteor is something that you can see and photograph. They're pretty common to see a meteor. To see a very bright meteor, which is called a fireball, those are uncommon. But they do happen every so often. And a meteor strike, of course, when I hear that, I think something hit the ground. But the chances of something hitting the ground is so rare that unlikely that a photograph, at least the one that I saw, led to any kind of meteorites or any rocks left on the ground. The thing about meteors, which is really unusual, and it's surprising, is that when you see a really bright fireball, it can look like it's very, very close to your eye because we don't have anything to compare it with. There's no background. It looks close. Maybe you might think of fireworks or something like that on the 4th of July. But that object, even at its closest, when it's blaring in the sky, is probably at minimum 60 to 70 miles above your head. And when you see it way off in the distance, it's 60 or 70 miles plus the horizontal distance to it. So it can look like it's going to fall right over the yonder hillside, but it's really about 100 miles away or more.
Yeah, it's a big atmosphere. And how far out in space are these things traveling? Are you able to estimate their distance from the Earth? Are we talking light years away?
Oh, no, nothing like that. You mean before they hit the Earth's atmosphere?
Yeah, I guess I'm a little green on what's the difference, a comet, a meteor. If you could just give us a little more information on these celestial objects.
Oh, sure. Yeah, a meteor, everything starts out, I guess, as even the meteors that you typically see in the sky, most of those are actually from comets. Now, you've seen pictures of comets. They've got tails. The tails are made out of gas and dust. And the dust can be just little tiny crunchy little particles like cookie grains or chocolate chip size or little seed sized particles. And that little thing, when it hits the atmosphere it can strike the atmosphere upwards of like 70,000 or higher miles per hour, can make a huge flaring ball. And that's, you think there's something large behind it, but that little particle from the comet, and sometimes it is an asteroid when it hits the atmosphere, burns up completely and doesn't leave anything of itself. And that's what most of that stuff is. Before it hits the atmosphere, it has a special name. It's called a meteoroid. And it's just a particle in outer space that's been left behind by a comet. Or in some cases, it's long ago, there may have been an asteroid collision. And fragments from that collision are out in space orbiting the sun. And occasionally we just get in the way, right? The Earth is orbiting, and those little pieces of comet or asteroids strike our atmosphere, and they burn up as meteors.
How often do they actually make it to the ground?
That's a great question. I can tell you about how many times a year people see them. So we call it a meteorite fall, and there are about anywhere between 5 to about a dozen witnessed falls of meteorites each year. That's one where you see the brilliant fireball. There's usually a sonic boom accompanying the fireball as it breaks up, maybe 20, 30, 40 miles high. And then the fragments spread out on the surface of the Earth, and someone goes and actually finds a piece. And when they find a piece from that fresh meteor fall, that is a meteorite, and that happens maybe 5 to a dozen times a year. Now, it happens more often than that, but a lot of these things, got to remember, Earth is mostly ocean, mostly water. So a lot of them go unwitnessed.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that are sleeping at night, too, that don't tend to notice these things.
I'm out there looking.
Well, that's pretty rare. So a dozen times worldwide, we actually get to pick up a chunk or two.
Yeah.
And then is that stuff... you know, you got to turn it over to NASA, and does it go to the museum? I mean,
what becomes
of these meteorites?
Here's the good news, Dave. If a meteorite breaks up and it lands on your property, your land, that's your meteorite.
Ooh.
You own it.
Nice. Hello, eBay.
And you can go straight to eBay with it and make a lot of money.
Wow.
It depends on the country, though. Some countries do not allow exporting of their meteorites. Some countries, I believe India is one, where if it lands, it doesn't matter where it lands, you could maybe try to hide it from the police, the authorities, but usually the authorities will come and take it, and it'll end up either at the police station or go to a museum. But some countries are different from ours.
Are they scientifically valuable? Is there study to be done?
Incredibly. Oh, my gosh, they're like treasure. Just imagine. Think of the money that we spend to go out into space, maybe on an asteroid mission. Since meteorites are really fragments of asteroids, there is a difference. The tiny particles that burn up all the time, those are from comets, okay? The bigger ones that actually land are from asteroids. And when you pick up and you find a piece of a meteorite, you're really finding something that once upon a time was out there between Mars and Jupiter from the asteroid belt. And through kind of willy-nilly, you know, through collision and eventually got sent down in the Earth's direction, it ended up on the ground. And you haven't had to pay anything. You haven't had to send a rocket to the asteroid. It landed for you. And the reason why they're valuable is because they're really what scientists call pristine or nearly pristine material from the days when the solar system formed. If you pick up a meteorite, it's very little changed from the time it was first congealed and formed as a rock 4.5 billion years ago. So to hold a meteorite, a fragment of an asteroid, is the oldest thing you're going to ever pick up or touch in your life. Most of the Earth's rocks have been altered, you know, they've been volcanically changed, they've been ground to bits, you know, and then formed layers and shot up in the mountains. But the stuff from meteorites is often super primitive and very, very ancient and hasn't been changed much.
Wow. So what's the biggest meteorite in our collection?
The biggest one is sitting over in, it's called Hoba, H-O-B-A. It's a big iron meteorite. No one saw it fall, at least no one ever recorded it. It's just sitting in the ground in I believe it's South Africa.
Wow.
And that is just a giant chunk. They've kind of developed the area so people can sit around the meteorite and touch it.
Wow, it's
so
that
that's
big.
Our biggest one. Our biggest ones that you see in the United States, the most common meteorite, comes from Meteor Crater in Arizona. And maybe some of the listeners have been out there, which is east of Flagstaff. It's a crater, it's about 3/4 or so mile in diameter. And there's tons of material that have been found around that crater from an impact that happened about 50,000 years ago.
So that might be one of your favorite vacation destinations?
Well, yes, I've been there just once. I enjoyed it very much.
Well, then it's off the list. Hey,
yeah, so that one's off the list. There's a few other places I would love to go, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, worldwide. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Bob King, and he is a astronomer, a photographer. He works for the Duluth News Tribune, and he writes the Astro Bob blog. And what's happening on the blog these days, Bob?
Well, there's a really big event coming up if you like looking at stuff in the sky. We have a total eclipse of the moon next week.
Whoa, I got to find my Pink Floyd.
Yeah, but you, that's right. Now get your pencils and papers out. No, the moon on next Wednesday morning. This is one, unfortunately, you will have to get up kind of early to see, unless you are out at around 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. But there's a wonderful total eclipse. This will be the second one this year, our first total eclipse of the moon. Maybe you saw this, Dave.
I did.
Back in April 14th.
Yes, it was a clear night.
It was a beautiful night, wasn't it?
Yes. I stayed up for it.
You did. Well, you're hopefully...
I got back up for it. It was in the middle of the night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of in the middle of the night. It was sort of late, and it went into the early morning hours, but it was clear the entire time.
Yeah.
Of course, the eclipses of the moon, they last for a few hours. It's not like the sun, you know, where you get a little bit and it's done, you know, the high point. For the moon, you get an entire hour, usually, of total eclipse. And that's when the moon lines up right behind the Earth with the sun in line, in this order, sun, Earth, moon, goes right into the Earth's shadow. And as it does, it gets kind of nibbled away over time. Now, so that people can make a note of it, I do have it on my blog, but I'll just mention it here on the air. The partial eclipse for us begins at 4:15 that morning, and the total eclipse starts at 5:25, and it lasts for about an hour. So if listeners want to just go out and look at it for a few minutes, let's say, the best time would be between, we'll just say 5:30 and 6:30, Wednesday morning.
Yikes, that is a little early, but I think for a lot of school kids and families, that's wake-up time.
It is wake-up time, and you know, that's what's good about it. The moon, though, will be low in the western sky. So if you go out at that time, you're going to be like, well, where's the moon? You have to be sure to look low in the west. And there you'll see it kind of hanging like this beautiful blood orange way low in the western sky.
Wow.
It could be a great event, and I hear the forecast is looking good, too.
Great. Great tip, Bob. Thanks for that. Now, what about meteor showers? When's a good time of year to catch these?
Well, let's see. We did have the Perseid shower this year in August, but there was a full moon or almost a full moon, so that kind of washed it out. There are several meteor showers, actually, this month and next, but they're all kind of minor. But one is unusual. There are the Orionid meteor shower, and that happens on the 20th and 21st of October. Those meteors, they come in the morning hours on those days, and they look like they will come from the constellation Orion. Not many, though. You might see maybe 10 to 12 per hour. There's also the Leonid meteor shower in the constellation Leo, and that's next month, November 17th and 18th. But the main thing to be aware of is through the month of October and through the first half of November, we have this really curious shower called the Taurid Fireball in the constellation of Taurus the Bull. And it's just a sort of a now-and-again shower, and it lasts for a month and a half or so. And if you see a brilliant, and it's known for its fireballs, if you see a brilliant fireball, and you can draw its track back towards the Seven Sisters star cluster, give or take, the Pleiades, you've probably seen one of those Taurus fireballs.
Boy, that's a great name for a new show, huh?
Yeah, well, definitely.
Heavy metal music, perhaps.
Yes, indeed.
And we have the pleasure of speaking with Bob King, and he's been updating us on meteor showers and eclipses and all things celestial. And how about a little photographic advice, Bob? I see that's your profession. What's some good tips for capturing some of these images?
To photograph fireballs, you mean? Photograph meteors?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, without digressing too much into f-stops and that sort of stuff.
No, we won't. Well, the main thing that you need is a tripod and a camera that has the ability to do a time exposure. So, and it has to be able to, you have to leave the camera shutter open for a few minutes in order to capture a meteor. Because it's so random a thing, you have to get really lucky to do it. The best times, of course, are during meteor showers when you have higher numbers of meteors. But yeah, you just put your camera on a tripod and you go out and you lock it down for, I usually, if I'm shooting meteors, I would lock it down for 2 or 3 minutes and then just expose a picture of the sky. But it is very random, so the best time is during an actual shower. And the next real shower where you could do this easily, even though I gave you those other ones, those are small ones, the next big and the last big shower of the year are the Geminids, and they come from the constellation Gemini, and that happens on December 13th and the 14th. So a tripod set out on a cold December night taking pictures, you might snag yourself a meteor picture. Main thing is to keep your shutter speed, you know, several minutes, and then, have the lens wide open so it lets in as much light as possible.
Any possibility there's an app out there, like a motion detecting shutter?
Oh, for meteors?
Yeah.
Not.
You know, like a game cam will catch a bear once it, you know, walks in front of it.
Yeah, that would be a wonderful thing. NASA has a network that it's been developing of all-sky cameras that are just on all the time because of the random nature.
That sounds expensive.
And that's, well, they're not real fancy cameras, and they have super wide-angle lenses, so they cover the whole sky, and they don't pick up faint meteors, but they catch the bright ones, and they work really good.
Also, radar picks these up, right?
Yes, Doppler radar. Well, it picks them up if they're large enough. It's got to ping something. So if it's the size of a grain of sand, probably not going to see it. But if it's a chunky thing that breaks up into pieces, it can actually ping those pieces, and we can see what they look like before they hit the ground. And meteorite hunters use Doppler radar to plan their hunt if they can get a hold of it. It's a really great new tool for using to hunt meteorites.
Wow.
So there's just so many things. But yeah, just mostly just go out and enjoy the meteor showers. And just about any time you go outside, even for a half an hour and just look up, you're guaranteed to see a meteor in a half an hour.
I will attest to that. A week ago, I drove my boat across the lake, middle of the night, saw a dozen of them. Nothing better than being like 50 miles from nowhere.
Darker, and that's another thing too, the darker the sky, the more meteors you're going to see. The average, on any night of the year, no showers, just any night, the average is about 7 per hour, just random meteors. And that's just comet dust that the Earth just cruises right into as it orbits around the sun at 18.5 miles per second. It just, and you know, you crash into it, and that thing, through friction, burns up in the atmosphere as a meteor.
Well,
yeah, they're out every night, every hour.
Yeah, it's one of the luxuries of Cook County, too. You got a lot of dark nights, dark skies.
Oh, it's the best.
Well, Bob, I just had to ask you, what do you think of the movie Armageddon?
You know what? I've only seen clips from it. I've never actually gone and seen the movie.
Oh, well, you got a lot to look forward to, my friend.
Oh, well, that sounds like fun. Yeah, I like sci-fi, stuff like that. Speaking of Armageddon and, you know, comets attacking the Earth and all of that, one thing that people might want to check out, there's a wonderful mission to a comet called Rosetta. Are you familiar with it?
Maybe.
There's a spacecraft that is orbiting a comet right now, about 350 million miles from the Earth. The comet has a wonderful name. It's called Churyumov-Gerasimenko, and it's taking close-ups of the surface of the comet. And this is the most alien, bizarro-looking world you're ever going to want to see.
Wow.
People want to look at what it looks like. I just happened today to put together a compilation of several still pictures and several 3D videos on my blog. And by 3D, I mean you get those funky glasses on with the red and the blue plastic. You know those?
Oh, yeah.
You put it, who's ever got a pair of those, if you can beg, borrow, and steal, get a pair of those and look at these videos full screen, and you will feel like you're out there with Bruce Willis and the rest of them.
Yes.
It's incredible.
And where can they look, Bob? What's the blog address?
The blog address is astrobob.areavoices, the way it sounds, areavoices.com.
Brilliant. Brilliant, Bob. Well, thanks so much for joining us on the Roadhouse and sharing all your knowledge and fascinating subjects. Night sky is hopefully, we got some clouds up here, so maybe it'll be a few days till we see the stars. But
well, guess what? I hear it. Again, it's supposed to be clear for the eclipse, that overnight, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. So we'll cross our fingers.
Great, Bob. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Enjoy the stars.
All right, you too.